This is In the News for April 12, 2006. I'm Scott Berguin from KSOWLP in Cottage Grove, Oregon. First up today, from CommonDreams.org and published in the Chicago Sun-Times yesterday, April 11th. Written by Jesse Jackson. Stop Bush before he attacks Iran. Here we go again. The administration says regime change is needed. Warnings are issued about the threat posed by the madman who leads the oil-rich country. Alarming intelligence estimates are leaked about nuclear weapons programs. The vice president warns monumental consequences if the alleged efforts to develop nuclear weapons are continued. Neoconservatives call for military action. Administration operatives express scorn for international monitoring. The Pentagon is reported not only to be developing contingency plans for an assault, but already launching mock bombing runs to measure air defense capacities. Covert military incursions are said to be active on the ground. Iran has oil and gas, lots of it, second only to Saudi Arabian reserves. It controls the straits of the Persian Gulf, where 40% of the world's oil flows each day. It is headed by an Islamist fundamentalist who vows Israel should be wiped off the map. Iran admittedly has a nuclear energy program in process, and many believe that it is committed to building nuclear weapons. But this may well be more about the United States than about Iran. President Bush's polls are at a record low. Republicans face a brutal off-year election. Karl Rove has pledged to make the war on terror a partisan issue in the fall. It surely isn't an accident the White House is turning up the heat on Iran now, just as it did against Iraq in the run-up to the 2002 elections. The White House preparations are ominous. Bush has said that an Iranian bomb is unacceptable. In dispatching troops to reconnoiter in Iran and airplanes to mock bombing runs, the White House is putting Iran on the world and the world on notice. We're ready to strike if Iran goes on with its program. Despite reservations from the Joint Chiefs of Staff, the New Yorker's Seymour Hersh reports the White House is contemplating the first use of nuclear weapons to take out the underground Iranian facilities that may be part of the weapons program. Is it conceivable that a president who sees himself on a divine mission has learned nothing from the debacle in Iraq? Remember the bit about being greeted as liberators in Iraq? Now, according to an anonymous contractor in Hersh's story, the White House is said to believe that the bombing will turn the people against the mullahs who run the government. That will counter the experience of every bombing effort since the invention of the airplane. The question is whether the Congress and the American people will roll over or stand up and call the administration to account. Surely, this is the time for Republicans to put aside their partisan zealotry and hold hearings, open and public, that explore the nature of the threat posed by Iran, the programs already underway by the administration and the intelligence estimates here and elsewhere, and what they really say. Reportedly, the White House is briefing selected legislators, those who are cheerleaders for the war in Iraq. It doesn't want hearings because it doesn't want to inform the minority Democrats, much less the American people. The president believes he has absolute authority to launch a war of his choosing, without congressional approval, UN mandate, or imminent threat. War would destabilize the Persian Gulf. Terrorism would spread. Bin Laden and others would rouse 1.2 billion Muslims with cries that the United States is seeking to destroy Islam. America would be supported by few, if any, of our allies, and actively, if not directly, opposed by Russia and China. We need international diplomacy, not unilateral bomb rattling toward Iran. We need a concerted plan for energy independence, reducing our reliance on foreign oil. We need to engage the world's nations in a grand alliance against terrorists, not isolate America as a rogue nation. It's time for Congress to act boldly and early before the administration rolls out another supposedly cost-efficient war in time for the fall elections. Again, that's from the Chicago Sun-Times, written by Jesse Jackson, and taken from CommonDreams.org. And now, somewhat related, also from CommonDreams.org and OneWorld.net, written by Hyder Rizvi. Native Americans want bunker buster tests stopped. Native Americans want U.S. authorities to cancel plans to detonate 700 tons of explosives on what they say is tribal land in Nevada. The planned explosion, scheduled for June 2nd, some 90 miles from Las Vegas, is aimed at aiding U.S. efforts to develop bunker buster weapons capable of penetrating solid rock. Officials have suggested the test would constitute the largest non-nuclear open-air blast in the test site history. Federal officials have described such efforts as essential to the administration of President George W. Bush's self-styled War on Terror, but to leaders of the Shoshone, also known as the Nui people, the planned detonation is just the latest in a decades-long history of experiments at the Nevada test site to shake the earth and raise a dust cloud. Raymond Yowell, chief of the Western Shoshone National Council said, quote, we are opposed to any further military testing on our lands, end quote. The site of the latest proposed test sites on the land recognized under the 1863 Treaty of Ruby Valley as part of the tribe's national territory, Shoshone leaders said, and the U.S. military therefore has no right to use it. The U.S. government disagreed and asserted its ownership of the land. Kevin Rohr, a spokesman for the National Nuclear Security Administration, which operates the test site, said, quote, without going through a lot of detail, the issue of ownership of the land area occupied by the Nevada test site, and for that matter very large sections of Nevada and Utah, is very complex, going back to the Ruby Valley Treaty, and in our eyes has been resolved, end quote. The U.S. Supreme Court had ruled in 1985 that the Shoshone had been paid in full for the land under the Indian Claims Commission Act of 1946, and Rohr said in an email, quote, and thus the land is property of the United States government, end quote. He also added, quote, my understanding is that funding has been set aside in a trust account for compensation, but there is disagreement among Western Shoshone on whether they should accept the funding, end quote. Shoshone leaders rejected the government's position and last month won a victory in their fight to reclaim territory from the Geneva-based UN Committee on the Elimination of Racial Discrimination, or CERD, said in a report that Washington's claim to the Western Shoshone land, quote, did not comply with contemporary human rights norms, principles, and standards that govern determination of indigenous property rights, end quote. Among other things, the panel cited special concern over the existence of nuclear waste dumped on tribal territory without consulting and over the objections of the Western Shoshone people. The 18-member panel also asked Washington to, quote, freeze, desist, and stop, end quote, actions being taken against the Western Shoshone Nation. In the ruling, CERD also cited concern over weapons testing at the Nevada test site as well as efforts to build a high-level nuclear waste depository at Yucca Mountain. Tribal leaders said Washington's plans to proceed with the June tests in the face of the UN panel's findings was a slap in the face of the international and Native American communities. There's more on this again at commondreams.org. That again is from oneworld.net, written by Hyder Rizvi. And finally today, also from oneworld.net, written by Abid Aslam, investors target Hershey over child labor on cocoa farms. Investors concerned about illegal child labor on West African plantations are demanding that Hershey Company spill the beans on where the candy maker gets its cocoa. Rights group Global Exchange, which holds 80 shares of Hershey stock, is putting a demand to a vote at the company's April 18th annual shareholders meeting in Hershey, Pennsylvania. The San Francisco-based rights group said its demand for disclosure is aimed at determining whether Hershey buys cocoa from Cargill Inc., Archer Daniels Midland Company, or Nestle Company. The agribusiness majors are contesting a separate federal lawsuit alleging they share some blame for child and forced labor on cocoa plantations in Ivory Coast, which alone supplies 40% of the world's cocoa. Kirsten Muller, Global Exchange's executive director, said, quote, illegal child labor is a major problem at cocoa farms in the Ivory Coast. Global Exchange and other Hershey shareholders need to know if the company's cocoa is being purchased from these farms, and if Hershey is at risk of adverse publicity or lawsuits if there's a chance that illegal child or slave labor is involved, end quote. Hershey has stated its opposition to the resolution, saying its list of suppliers is subject to business confidentiality and that revealing it would jeopardize the company's competitive standing. The firm also has said it takes part in industry-wide efforts to ensure cocoa is free of child and worker exploitation. Global Exchange acknowledged that the U.S. chocolate industry has agreed to undertake voluntary efforts to root out child labor on cocoa farms following revelations by West African and international anti-slavery groups that children barely old enough to enter primary school had been sent to toil as farm hands and porters. Those efforts broke down last year, the group said in a statement, and, quote, the industry failed to come up with a system for monitoring and certifying that U.S. chocolate products aren't made using forced child labor, end quote. Ivory Coast Child Labor Monitoring Project reported last December that children continue to be pressed into slave-like work on cocoa farms some 5 years after their plight, exposed by rights groups, became the stuff of award-winning journalism. Competing reports have asserted, however, that the abysmal conditions now represent an aberration rather than norm in the war-divided country. Global Exchange's proposal is unlikely to win a majority of shareholder votes Tuesday, not least because the Hershey Trust Company, a charity hostile to the disclosure proposal, holds around three-fourths of the company's stock. There's more on this at commondreams.org. And again, that came from oneworld.net, written by Abid Aslam. This has been In the News for April 12, 2006. I'm Scott Berguin from KSOWLP in Cottage Grove, Oregon. I'll talk to you next time.